Tell the people what you're here for.
Bring everything out closer to the people.
We got to stop it, brother. Let's get together and unify.
Ready for a change, change of attitude. Employment ready. Where do I go now?
Between 15 and 30.
Basics.
And there's always a message involved.
What's good, Toronto? You're listening to another edition of Radio Basics here on CHRY 105.5 FM. I'm your host for tonight, Steve DeSilva, bringing you timely discussion on the elections here in Canada. We're going to be talking to a couple people here in studio, some special guests tonight, about why you shouldn't vote in the next elections. That coming up at the top of the show. Before that, however, we're going to be going to headline news. I got international news for y'all today. And for some timely local news, check out basicsnews.ca. To Egypt, less than 2 months after the popular rebellions in Egypt that led to the removal of dictator Hosni Mubarak, a mere cosmetic change to Egypt's political and social system, last week Egyptians learned that the revolution is far from over. In pre-dawn raids on Tahrir Square on Saturday morning, the military stormed the people, injuring at least 71 and leaving at least one dead. "We are starting to realize that unfortunately the military is our enemy," said Mohamed Wagdi, a protester and unemployed engineer who witnessed the raid. Soldiers and police used tasers and batons to try to drive the protesters out of Tahrir Square. Meanwhile, to West Africa, where French military forces shift the balance of power in the Côte d'Ivoire. Last week, French attack helicopters struck Ivorian military bases in the commercial capital of Abidjan and destroyed over 10 armored vehicles, 4 anti-aircraft weapons, and the broadcasting station of the state-run Radio Diffusion Télévision Ivoirienne, as well as firing on the presidential building and residence. French troops also took over the nation's main airport earlier last week. Today, it was confirmed that Côte d'Ivoire's Laurent Gbagbo has surrendered to the forces of the presidential claimant, Western-backed Alassane Ouattara. It has been reported that Gbagbo was arrested by a raid on his bunker by French military forces. To many, the kidnapping of Gbagbo by invading French forces amounts to nothing less than another Western-backed coup d'etat in Africa. To Libya now, the now overtly Western-backed Libyan rebels have rejected the proposals for a peace offer from the African Union, insisting that the civil war would not come to an end without Gaddafi's removal. The Libyan rebels, now being openly backed and armed by NATO forces and assisted through ongoing military intervention and continuous bombing, have been unable to advance their position significantly despite the assistance of the imperialist powers of NATO. Over the weekend, Gaddafi's forces launched major attacks on the Eastern Front in the town of Ajabiya on Saturday before being repelled by rebel forces. Since the beginning of the military campaign against Libya, hundreds of targets have been bombed and missile strikes have been conducted all across the country, where popular rebellions in the Middle East have been able to remove hated dictators without Western support. And despite Western support to those dictators, Libya's armed rebellion has been unable to do away with Gaddafi despite the assistance of massive foreign intervention, thereby revealing the huge differences between what has played out in Libya from other countries like Tunisia, Egypt, Yemen, Bahrain, and elsewhere. To Portugal now, where another battle against neoliberal austerity measures is intensifying. In late March, the Portuguese government collapsed after the ruling party of José Socrates could not find support for the imposition of austerity measures necessitated by a $116 billion loan needed by the Portuguese government. Portugal is now the third country in the Eurozone to seek help after last year's multi-billion euro rescue package for Greece and Ireland from the European Union and the International Monetary Fund. The conditionalities associated with such bailouts, which are necessitated by the crisis of capitalism and the crises of state debts and deficits created by bailouts over the last few years, seek to impose harsh cutbacks in social spending and wage rollbacks on working-class people. The solutions to the 2008 financial collapse and the overall crisis of capitalism continue to be attacks on workers, while banks and many corporations continue to produce record profits. Portugal has been thrown into the thick of an election campaign centering on the austerity measures. Elections in Portugal will occur on June 5th. And like I said a little earlier in the show, you can check out basicsnews.ca for some important local news. The 25th issue of Basics has just come out this past weekend, and we'll be covering some of those top stories later on in the show. For now, let's check out this track, Greatest Story Never Told, Saigon.
Just went and took a minute to breathe. Even squeezed off a warning shot. Moose knuckled to Brownsville. They impatiently waiting for your boy to drop. Lo and behold, greatest story never told. Chapter 1, verse 1. The genesis of my scroll is realer than 9-11. I rhyme about lying reverend while showing no total respect to the big guy in heaven. I rap about politicians. How money's the acquisition. To get it, they gotta keep us without a pot to piss in. Struggling to survive. 9 to 5 ain't making it. Turn on the TV, all I see is celebs taking it. Feeling like they got all the bread, but they ain't breaking it. I'm taking it soon as I find the oven where they baking it. The greatest story never told. Tell them again, God, let it in. Look, the greatest story never told. Yeah, nigga. The greatest story never told. We was born here to pick the cotton. Now we picking the music that Massa listen to, the clothes that she rocking. We don't drive a hard bargain. All we want back is crack, some more gaps and some more of that bullshit rap. The crime rhyme is still black on black. We need a leader like me to get us back on track. When y'all make them diss records, do you know what you do in the black community? Marking and promote the fact that we lack unity. The white people look at you and laugh. You look like a porch monkey boy dancing for cash. Wanna get on a record and talk trash. See him at the awards and don't do but walk bad, and that's something we call crab. Tower rappers acting so hard when they really just all add. Abandonation on the war path. And if we gotta bring some heat out, then we change in the forecast. Like, whoa, great story never told. Great story never told. The greatest story never told. Again and I was sinning, now I'm in the ninth inning of the game of life, grinning cause I'm winning. I teach you how to rhyme, y'all only know how to riddle. I'm deep, the government won't do me like Malcolm Little. They say that I'm a threat to the society. Since I put my thinking cap on and stop letting them f***ers lie to me. You gotta take it back to face the fact. These D's look at us as just another case to crack. If I bust a gun in the hood, I get Attica or the cat. I bang a gat and I rap, I get a pat on the back. Best believe I know better than that. This a lesson for all my listeners. This shit ain't just regular rap. It's the greatest story that ever been spat. It's gonna teach the hood and at the same time make my pockets elephant fat. Go ahead with all the irrelevant rap. Me and my nigga just blaze, bring the true elephant back. It gon' woo, it's the greatest story never told.
Radio Basics, we're back here on CHOY 105.5 FM. And the topic of our discussion tonight is the upcoming federal elections in Canada. As Canadians are subjected to a barrage of campaign ads seeking to win their vote for the federal elections planned for May 2nd, I am joined in the studio tonight by a set of activists who are arguing that Canadians should not vote at all. in the studio with us tonight is Louise Jones and Joshua Mufarad Paul of the Boycott2011.ca campaign, or Boycott the Elections campaign being organized around Canada. Thank you guys so much for being in the studio with us tonight.
Thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
So many Canadians are being told right now that the only way to solicit, the only way to ensure civic participation and the strength of democracy is for people to go out and vote in the next federal elections. Your campaign is arguing otherwise. Why would you argue this to be the case?
Well, first of all, I think we need to look back on the history of how this campaign came about and then discuss mm-hmm. that question. Last federal elections, this campaign was started. It was a coalition campaign with having a nonpartisan base and push by the Revolutionary Communist Party Canada in Quebec, specifically in Montreal. And they pushed it to kind of talk about it as an organizing tool and really a tool to say, look, 40% of people aren't voting in elections. 40% of registered voters aren't voting in elections. So they saw that that was an implicit boycott, and they wanted to kind of cognize it as an explicit boycott to say, to go out and ask people on the street, why aren't you voting? And to start talking about organizing outside of the electoral process. One of the things that they were arguing, and that we have taken this up to in the context of Toronto, is arguing is that the electoral process, which is, you know, just 4 years of every federal election and you vote, kind of creates this these boundaries around democracy. And so we're kind of aiming this campaign, generally speaking, about kind of breaking those boundaries and talking about what democracy can be like outside of this four-year vote for the, you know, four parties or less, right, that may or may not represent our interests.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think what we've been seeing over the last 30, 40 years especially is growing inequality, further in entrenchment of the capitalist agenda and imperialist wars. And with each election, we get to choose, you know, we have fewer and fewer options. So
I would just add to that, you know, that just before the election was called, all parties in parliament voted for the invasion and bombing of Libya. There was a complete consensus over that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. The NDP supported the Libya invasion. And I mean, with each election, we're just asking, you know, we're saying, okay, so the last 4 years, you cut this much to education, you cut this much to welfare and unemployment insurance. Can you just keep it at the same level for the next 4 years? Mm-hmm. So, you know, and then they cut further. So with every election, we're just asking for less and less. And the point is that this isn't how, I mean, it's not through the parliamentary process in Canada that real change has come about, and this isn't where the left should be wasting their resources in the parliamentary system.
Mm-hmm. Indeed, you know, I was actually just having a conversation with somebody this past weekend, and this person was of greater privilege than most Canadians, and however, they were a liberal, like a small L liberal, sometimes big L liberal, and they said, you know, the people who voted for Ford got what they deserve. Now that Ford is in power, now he's hurting the people that voted for him, and that's what they deserve. So what do you make of this logic that people get what they deserve when they vote for any of the given parties, especially considering how often the parties actually lie, come into power, and then often don't implement what they promised, and then thus regenerating the electoral cycle?
Well, I kind of want to argue with that logic about the people got what they deserve when they voted for Ford, because I think we need to question why people voted for Ford. And part of this campaign is to question these kinds of things. There was a lot of poor people voted for Ford. A lot of poor people didn't vote at all. Yeah. But and so when a lot of people that are I've heard this said a lot too by people that come from privileged backgrounds that say, oh, look at all these poor people voting against their own interest. They got what they deserved, and maybe we should just work for them. But I think what's happened is that the right has done a really good job organizing outside of the electoral process, where the left kind of just gets on the board and says, let's push for the most social democratic candidate, let's not go out and actually talk to the people and explain why we want them to, like, you know, consider democracy and things. And so you get the right speaking to them in sometimes the most reactionary ways, but can do it really easily because that there's a gap that's been left about a lot of people not organizing.
So let's review the most recent elections Torontonians have gone through, the municipal elections. The candidate offered up by official labor officialdom, you know, the unions, the municipal base of the NDP in Toronto, what they offered up was Joe Pantoloni, who basically offered no advances, no gains for regular people. In fact, promised that he would probably raise some taxes. So And this was, of course, in the context of 6 years of a Miller government, which was supposed to be a left government that attacked workers, TTC workers, city workers, increased police spending. So really, what options were left were people left with when it came to Ford?
Yeah, exactly. And by voting within the system, we're legitimizing our lack of choice. And we're saying that this is a democratic system. And that's the message that's being used in imperialist wars that Canada is behind. We're saying we're bringing democracy in Afghanistan and Libya. Obviously, that's not the case. You know, if we really wanted to go into countries that needed to be stabilized and really wanted to bring real democracy, we would have gone into Egypt or, you know, the Democratic Republic of the Congo. So that's definitely not what's behind these wars, and they're very destructive, these imperialist wars. And so we're kind of giving credence to this idea of a democratic country, you know, pushing its agenda in the world by legitimizing this so-called democracy.
So is the opposition to the participation in the elections then merely a response to the fact that all parties are pro-imperialist, pro-war, or is there a domestic basis to this as well? For example, would you make the case to Canadian electors who are being encouraged to go vote in the next campaign that it's actually not in their interests? And I also want to say that I'm going to be opening up the phone lines to our listeners. So if you have some commentary, comments, questions for our guests, please call us here in the studio, 416-736-5656. And just remember to keep your comments short. And no swearing. So how would you answer that?
Well, I actually think it's about a number of things, right? I mean, yeah, it is about the imperialism thing, and it is about things here in Canada and on the ground. And I think what we need to preface, though, it's more than just saying don't vote to people, right? It's a campaign that's an organized boycott. And, I mean, one of the weaknesses of it that we understand now is that when we started talking about this campaign in December, no one knew they were going to be hit with the elections in the spring. So we've had a really short period of time in Toronto and other places that aren't in Montreal to get this together when the Montreal folks have been doing it since the last election. But that in mind, one of the reasons for it is an organizational tool for people here on the ground and to go out and talk to people about why they don't vote. And the fact is, a lot of people don't vote in neighborhoods. We've been out on the streets and you see people come up and they actually see this connected to their interests. They aren't thinking about imperialism necessarily, which we do want to talk about as well. Yeah. But they're saying, look, we're not going to vote for the NDP even because they want to put more cops on the street. And those cops
indeed
beat me
they
up.
Did.
Right?
They did in Toronto.
And they did, right?
They've done it and almost doubled the police.
Yeah, they've done it, and they've also proposed that they're going to be tough on crime in this election as well. As they've proposed they're going to be tough on, like, world terrorism too. So, I mean, these things are linked, and I think the people on the street do. We are talking about the issues they have, and we go out and talk to them every day. And a lot of them don't vote, and they're like, they don't vote because they're, you know, lazy or stupid or anything like that, and they don't care. They don't vote because they don't see anyone representing them, and they're like, anyone's going to evict us in this position in the neighborhoods we've been in. So in that mind, we just want to preface that it is about that organizational tool that we wish we had more time to get to kind of the power that it could be.
Yeah, sure. And just to add to that, the reality is that 40% of Canadians don't vote, and especially if you go to low-income communities in Canada, and you ask people if they're going to vote, the answer is usually no, because who are they going to vote for? Who really represents them? I mean, the NDP is funding 2,500 more cops, and they're supposed to be the most left-leaning party. So really, people are already boycotting the system, and we're trying to make this an active boycott.
So we have Lynn. We have Lynn on the line right now, and she had a comment. Lynn, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
So you had a question or a comment?
I do, actually. Is this Steve?
Yes, it is.
It's about Lynn, but I'm just using Lynn. Hi, I had a question for the speakers on the show tonight, and I was just wondering, how was the reception when you were talking to people about the boycott campaign, given that I have also been doing some of this campaigning work? One of the biggest challenges is to question this notion of the vote. Like, why are we telling people not to vote when there are people in other parts of the world that would, quote, kill to be able to vote?
I guess, you know, if we look to other parts of the world, in Egypt, in Tunisia, people are also rising up in these countries and realizing that the so-called democracy that they have there is false. And we have to support these countries by showing the same thing here. You know, our government, no matter what party is in power, our government is funding militaries that suppress people in countries like Egypt and India. So we have an obligation to support those people's struggles there by organizing out in the streets outside of this parliamentary system.
Mm-hmm. And if I can, if you don't mind, if I add to that, I think it's important to note that it was just a couple weeks ago that a Canada Elections sponsored and funded elections in Haiti, you know, which has formal democracy, was massively boycotted. I believe only 17% of the population actually came out to vote in elections that were perfectly, and formally, I should say, democratic. And mind you, in a country that's under military occupation and had its democratically elected president kidnapped 7 years ago by Canada. Josh?
Yeah, I was going to add too, like, this is, I'm glad this question came about, because I think that when people ask this question about how dare you boycott this when people are fighting for democracy, I think we have to, again, ask what this democracy people are fighting for is, especially in the context of the recent struggles in the Middle East. Mm-hmm. We look at, like, the radical forces in the Tunisian one. They didn't like the democratic people, the so-called electoral democratic people they got in, and they demanded them to step down as well. Mm-hmm. So they, in some ways, they had a more violent boycott on that. These democratic demands aren't looking just for to have a vote every 4 years by, like, you know, people sponsored by the same class. They're looking for a more radical notion of democracy. And on that notion, too, I was talking to a friend of mine in Afghanistan, and I was talking about the campaign boycott, and he said, well, you know, you should tell people that, like, of course you should boycott your country because you're bombing mine. and I think that, and he says, you have no problem boycotting places like, you know, Israel and getting mad at the Israelis there for, like, saying, you know, who complain about being boycotted, and you're saying, well, you shouldn't complain because your country's doing this. He goes, well, your country's doing the same thing, and you're also a settler colonial country, so why do you have no problem boycotting other countries but not yourself? And I think that's also a good point.
Mm-hmm. You know, thank you, Lynn, very much for the contribution. Again, if our listeners have any contributions they make, they want to call in, it's 416-736-5656. And we're talking about why Canadian electors should not vote in the upcoming elections. So many people, I believe, would respond to this idea with, those who do vote, because as you aptly pointed out, in the last elections, 40% of electors didn't vote. So therefore, many of those who were not registered and many of those who don't have citizenship and full status also did not vote. So you can actually say that more than half of the people in this country, and if you include youth, you can probably bring it down to about 40%, did not vote. However, there are many that would still argue that this is apathy, this is passivity. If you don't vote, you can't complain. If you don't vote in the next upcoming elections, you have no right to complain about what comes in. What would you say to that?
I think that's quite the opposite, actually. If we don't vote, then we do have the right to complain, because if you do vote, then you're buying into the system, and you're saying that, you know, it's okay that you supported this government or you supported this party, and they do have input in Parliament, so you should be fine with, you know, the bills that they vote for if you're supporting them.
Josh?
Yeah, and I think, too, like, having talked to people when we, like, again, I wish we had way more time to have started this campaign, but having actually done work and, like, being now really overtired from it, but having talked to people on the street, that's not the reason why they don't vote. Again, their vote is, there's two things that come out usually, a sense of anger and a sense of powerlessness. And that's been the most common kind of feelings. Like, number one, the anger that no one in the government represents them and they're still going to get evicted or beaten up by the cops or you know, still remain poor no matter what. Yeah. And then the powerlessness is they don't know what they can do and they don't see the electoral system giving them any, empowering them in any kind of way. So it's really good to talk to them about, well, what does empowerment look like to you on the streets and what do you want that to be? And then actually end up in dialogue with them about what real democracy looks like, which is something that I think a lot of people here in Toronto haven't been doing for a very long time.
Yeah, and just to be clear about our own principles as a media organization, to our listeners, we've been writing and covering elections for 4 or 5 years now since our organization, Basics Community News Service, was created. And our position has always been to basically look at what the parties stand for, assess their policies. If they don't actually work towards your interests, then just ignore them and organize. Ultimately, we can't exercise any influence over these forces, especially if working people themselves are not organized. But your campaign is taking it one step further. You're actually telling people to turn that passive, electoral abstentionism into an active boycott. So what signifies that move to turn it towards being something active? What do you think the significance of that is?
I think we really need to be, we need to stand up and be counted, and we need to organize and say that, you know, we are rejecting this process and we are rejecting these parties. It's not that we're apathetic, we're actually very political, and we're going to organize outside of the system for real change. And the problem is that so many on the left have wasted their time canvassing for the NDP. They've wasted their time, you know, going into meetings, going into the municipal buildings and the parliament and asking for small changes here and there. But imagine how much more powerful we'd be if we were able to actually, you know, fight for our real demands instead of saying, don't cut this back any further.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think there's two things about why we're saying boycott the elections. I think the first one that Louise brought up was this notion to kind of draw a line amongst us as the left, and to kind of break this way of thinking about politics as having some kind of sacred, I mean, sorry, not politics, but electoral democracy as having some kind of sacred kind of aura around it. And a lot of people, it's actually really hard for a lot of people I know who say they reject the parliamentary system still seem to cling to some notion that it matters, even if it's the lesser evil kind of concept. So we're trying to break that way of thinking and start to think about thinking outside of the box again, as the left has done historically. And number two is again, that organizational factors. I think what makes this really interesting is that at elections times, everyone is talking about elections, right? Even everyone on the street, even the people that don't vote, they're talking about it and they're angry about it. And so when you go down the street and say, you put up a poster for the boycott, you have 10 people coming up to you right away that if you're putting up a poster for another political event at another time of year, you would just be ignored probably. Like, I mean, this is on the mind and immediately they want to talk about it. And that kind of thinking about it like that and getting them to think about what a boycott looks like, and most of them are actually just like in the neighborhoods you've been, have been like, yeah, Yes, of course we should do this, right? And then we start talking about afterwards what that means and the politics behind that. But I think it does, since the electoral process is on everyone's mind, people are thinking about politics in a certain way, and we're trying to make kind of a concrete, radical way of thinking about it amongst the people that are thinking about it all the time in this period of the whatever electoral process.
Yeah. Just to remind our listeners, we're looking to hear from you. If you got something to say, call us, 416-736-5656. And let us know what you think. Should we boycott the elections, or should we rally for the lesser of evils? So let's actually deal with this issue, the lesser of evils. I don't think anybody could deny that the conservatives, and often the liberals, govern with a certain sense of shame, you know, shamefaced, like unabashed, shameless attack on working people. And many believe that at least more NDP candidates, or at least an NDP, maybe a municipal or a provincial level, will be better than letting the Conservatives in. What would you respond to that? Is the lesser of evils a better option?
I don't think that we're going to decry anyone for wanting to go and strategically vote for the lesser of evils, but we're just trying to start a conversation, and what we want to really expose is that we're not going to bring about real change by voting in this way. I mean, we're not going to stop the exploitation of workers. We're not going to stop the criminalization of youth. And so it's saying, fine, if you really want to go out and vote, do so, but definitely organize in your communities, go out on the streets, because that's where real change is going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Josh?
Yeah, well, I think also part of this boycott, too, is I think we do need to, like, break away also from this lesser of evil thinking, because I think most political changes happen outside of the electoral process. Again, like the right is organizing out of there. And if we look at the way every party has shifted over the years, every party has gotten more right, from like the Conservatives to the NDP. Where does this shift come from? And after all the organization of people wanting to vote for the lesser evils all the time, they still end up with the people they consider evil every year, right? This whole last election with Harper, vote for the lesser evil. Well, Harper got in again, right, as a minority government. And we haven't been, I mean, maybe if people did go out and organize on the streets with people to, like, get them to vote for the NDP, it might do something. But the fact is those people aren't voting for a reason, right? And no one's addressing that, and that's kind of what the campaign is about.
So we have a listener on the line with us. Brad, you had a comment.
No, I was going to say, I think Josh just touched on partially on what I was, on part of what I was going to say. A lot of times I think, like, the biggest political changes are not those that occur in the electoral process. I think they have a lot more to do with people, as you said, organizing themselves and coming up with some sort of common goal. And the other part of what I was going to say is I'm 24 years old. I'm a student at York also. And I've never voted for any municipal, federal, or even the elections for, like, the student council. Just because I find that not as much at York, but definitely, like, the ads you see on TV where very few of the political ads are actually talking about what the candidate is campaign, what their campaign is. It's more bashing the other candidate's campaign. And I think it's like the it's absolutely juvenile, you know? And I don't know, I think that there's no, as you said, like people end up voting for the lesser of evils, but we get stuck with the same people.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe different faces, but the same exact situation. So
yeah. How do you guys respond to that? What do you think?
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I think on the lesser of evils point, if we look at the NDP and the fact that they just announced that they're going to fund 2,500 more police across Canada, and they're also putting millions more to prosecution. And when they talked about that, they said that's to stop youth gangs. And that just shows how removed they are, because people in low-income communities are not worried about, I mean, they're more worried about their child being taken away by the police for a small infraction than they are about gangs. And this definitely isn't a solution to the problem. This is just about criminalizing the poor and criminalizing dissent. I think we can't really go with a straight face to low-income communities and tell them to vote for the NDP.
And I also want to respond to something Brad said about political change happening outside of the system and kind of expand on that idea, because I feel that a lot of people who have this thing about we have to vote for these governments because they give us things have this notion of history that's not correct. They seem to think that it was, you know, the NDP when it was, you know, not the NDP under Tommy Douglas that gave them health care, right? That it was just a party that everyone voted in that gave them health care. And then these electoral parties at one point of time, you know, even earlier, decided to give the right to unionize or something like that to the workers. It's like these things we have, it's like these are the parties of the ruling classes that have responded to like large-scale movements on the ground that have happened outside of the parliamentary like, process.
At the point where
and
they've had no choice.
What was that, Brad?
No, sorry, I was just going to say, yeah, it's like it's not like the politician got into office and then made the change. It's usually like it gets to the point where they have no choice but to respond to the like uproar that's happening around them before any like massive change like that is made.
Yeah, we can almost anticipate a decade from now, whoever is ruling, if a corrupt, you know, parasitic regime remains in Egypt,
exactly,
they're going to be celebrating the democratic transition in Egypt and pretending like it was them who made it. What do you guys make of this?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right that so many, even on the Canadian left, think that voting is sacred and we absolutely must go out and vote. But people think that that's enough, that they can go out and vote every 4 years, and they voted for the NDP, so they made the right move for the left, and that's just absolutely ludicrous.
So we're in the last couple of years, we've been in the mire of economic crisis that is not going away. Unemployment is rising. Recession has struck all the imperialist countries, and of course it's been there in many other countries around the world, and so we have a parallel to the situation in the 30s and 40s. But in the 30s and 40s, there were vibrant, formidable, and revolutionary working class organizations. What does that have to do? How does that relate to the gains and concessions that working class people made then, as compared to now, where we're strictly on the defensive and being attacked on every front?
I think the question just answered itself because it was kind of loaded. But clearly the fact that there was strong movements then is what led to them getting what they had, and we need stronger movements like that now. I think not that there isn't the possibility of strong movements all over the place, and you know we can speak to that. But I think this is another method of trying to organize people, and really for me, you know, just talk about what democracy is like outside of the system, and you know what a movement outside of parliamentarianism would look like.
Yeah, the question is that no matter who is in power, we keep getting pushed, and we keep getting pushed to the right. Even in the U.S., we see with Obama, this supposed progressive candidate won elections, and there's been a further push to the right with the Tea Party, and that's because people didn't organize because they thought it was enough to vote in Obama and he would take care of things.
So the people demobilized, especially Chicano, Latin American immigrants, the African population demobilized themselves, while with the President Obama of Obama in office, and given the very race-based and racist politics in the United States, you have the right organizing white people, people whose economic situations are deteriorating, yet they're not being presented with any solutions to their problems. Louise, you wrote an article for Basics that just came out in issue 25 that looks at how the conservatives, the liberals, and the NDP have all attacked working class people when they've been in office. I want to talk about that, but just after a short break, because I want to try to get some more callers in. So give us a call, 416-736-5656. We'll go to a track for a moment. We'll be right back, and thanks a lot, Brad, for your call.
In the sky like this, point at the satellite, tell them to suck this hit. We gon' kill them with the sound and get wild in the crowd, now stop.
Go,
get buck, let your adrenaline rush. Get buck, let your adrenaline rush. Get buck, let your adrenaline rush. Get buck, let your adrenaline rush.
I got the cow, cut a bounce and that Bengali swagger. What a chicken flow, these other gimmicks don't match up. If you need that real hip-hop, say hell yeah. If you know hip-hop ain't dead, say hell no, like that. And like this, and up. Real MCs take the mic back, listen up. Energy shines, I don't need to glisten up. Keep your change, your rims, and your stolen styles. You sound like your favorite rapper, so you're famous now. Riding in your Beamer, grinding like a diva.
Some Toronto-based revolutionary hip-hop from Unknown Misery. We're back with our show, and we have Gladys on the line, and she's got a comment. Thank you, Gladys, for calling in. What's your comment?
Yeah, so you manage to get a strong movement going on, or if there's a strong movement going on in Toronto, in terms of the mobilization and whatnot, what would the leadership of that look like, and what would it for your guests? How would that lead? Who would be in the forefront of that leadership?
That's a really interesting question. So, and I would add to that, what's to prevent people's leadership from just being co-opted by those who are availing themselves of electoral politics and then resubordinating us to their hegemony, just like we're seeing in Egypt to a certain extent and in other countries? How do you answer that?
Okay, well, first of all, I should point out that just before I start talking about the leadership question, that there was, around the coalition, there were certain kind of principles that were established, general principles, so that people from different organizations could get involved.
You mean the coalition boycott coalition? Okay.
And the principles were anti-capitalist and anti-imperialist. So we anti-racist and all this kind of anti-oppressive language. So we definitely didn't want to work with anyone from the right in this anyhow, and so they were excluded. Yeah. But still, the question of organization lingers. And since this is used as an organizational tool for different organizations to go out and organize, those of us that have certain organizational affiliation principles are using it in the way that we want to build a movement according to our principles versus others. I mean, the anarchist is doing it differently from me, who's a communist, who believes in building it towards, like, organizing an actual communist party.
What does that actually mean? What does it mean for you as a communist to tell people not to boycott? And how do we address the sister's question, Gladys, of co-optation of leadership and just the resubordination to some other kind of, you know, dominating system?
Well, it has to be a constant struggle. I mean, we have to start with democracy in our activist organizations and our grassroots organizations, and we have to continually build up and continually ask for more and more, increase our tactics from occupying buildings, it's not easy, but we have to fight this capitalist system.
You know, I'm reminded of a quote. This topic reminds me of a quote from the late, but actually very young, Fred Hampton, before he was assassinated by Chicago police, when he was at a rally and he was telling people that, just to paraphrase, of course, I can't capture the beauty of his speech, but he said that socialism is the people. If you hate socialism, you hate yourself, because what socialism is, or communism, which is slight differences between the term, but more or less the same thing. What it means is that you don't want to see yourself in power. You actually don't want to see yourself governing. So what is the relationship between this question of people power and the question of boycotting elections and building some kind of movement that can't be resubordinated to electoral politics and schemes?
Well, I think, number one, before we get into this question, that what's great about this question is it moves us further down the line from something that is just a boycott to talk about accumulating forces of people that want to reject the system, which I think is a first step in any kind of talk about when we go out and do that, and I go out with my comrades who have different politics but are still progressive, we're organizing with different things in mind, and there's kind of a struggle or a line struggle that goes on. I think people will be attracted to the politics that maybe do work the best, and if you actually represent them the best and have good practice, then that's going to allow you to build your forces. So, but I mean, this is like now to move ahead to talk about like what this communism is that, like, say I talk about, is yes, it is this thing about people's power, and I think about it as being a pro-people kind of thing. And what it looks like is something that is, you know, moving between me talking about each according to their means, right? You know, having actually economic democracy on that kind of level, and a mass line that's connected to the people, and a way to like kind of really allow them to have power over their own lives, which they don't have. But I mean, this is like this is an organizational question that I faced in numerous organizations, and you know, it opens like a whole can of worms. It's an amazing conversation, and it's one of those conversations that I want to have on the street all the time with people actually themselves talking about what they think it means to govern their own lives, right? Mm-hmm. To have according to their own means and living as, you know, as a social being instead of isolated from everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to commercial. We're going to come back with this discussion. We're going to continue. If you're listening into the show, you have a comment to make, please do. We'd love to hear from you. 416-736-5656. Whether you're convinced or not, should Canadians boycott? Give us a call.
The voice of the community. This is CHRY 105.5 FM.
Radio Basics, we're back in the studio, and we're talking about whether Canadians... or most Canadians, in fact, will see their interests served by voting in the elections. On the line with us now is a commentator, one of our listeners, Derek. What did you have to say?
I just have a few comments to make before I get into what you all are talking about. It's elections coming up.
Yeah.
But the gas price going up, nobody's saying nothing. I drive vehicles every day. You see what Rob Ford did when he took out the vehicle registration tax? I went in to pay my registration for my renewal. There was $60 added on instantly, not five, not two, not three. Nobody sees these things. Why are we waiting now until the election?
Was there anything else?
I'm just saying this now. Everybody takes the TTC. The TTC strikes whenever they want to, when they don't get a raise from the government. And everybody's still on the TTC every day. Torontonians are blind, Ontarians are blind. Why are we waiting now for the election? Nobody should be voting at all. Boycott the election, boycott the gas price, everybody park their vehicle and stay home. TTC does it whenever they want to.
Uh-huh.
So we shouldn't wait until the election to say we... No, we should start a long time ago. Everybody, all Torontonians, everybody should start a long time. Everybody's still driving. The gas is almost 1:30, and everybody's still driving. Nobody's saying nothing. We naive. Torontonians are too naive.
Well, I guess this brings us into the question of precisely of people's power. When we say nobody is saying anything, what we're actually saying is the corporate press and the media, which have a very different set of interests in the people. Was there anything else, Derek?
No, that's all I have to say.
All right, so
nobody should be voting to support the guy.
Yeah, thanks
nobody.
For that comment. It actually echoes a lot of the comments when we started this boycott that we've had on the street. I've had more than one person, when we started doing this, come up to us and say, you should have been doing this a long time ago.
That's correct, yes.
The elections are now. Why did you start this boycott now? You should have been doing this in January, or better yet, like a year ago.
That's right, yes. Sure.
And so, I mean, this is the whole idea of it just came up in January. So I wish we had started it longer ago, but and hopefully we can continue this for previous elections. But
because
I think one of the things that you're speaking
to
that I find interesting is not obviously not just about boycotting the elections right now, but boycotting the state in general, which is what this process is about. And I want to emphasize that like one of the arguments that was made for this boycott elections thing was a method to talk about boycotting the state, as it exists now. The Canadian
That's correct.
State.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
You want to say something,
and I agree.
Louise?
No. Yeah.
But we would support the TTC and their right for decent salaries. We do support workers, but your point does show that the direct action of the TTC is quite effective. So that's why we support direct actions over just simply going and checking off a box.
Indeed, you know, we look to Europe over. Derek, I'm going to get your last comment in here.
Yes, sir.
But we look to Europe over the last couple years, right? The French people and their formal democracy voted in Sarkozy. Yet at the same time, Sarkozy's policies of austerity also produced the biggest strikes in that country's history for the last 40 years. So we see this big divide between formal political democracy and economic democracy. Derek, I believe you had another comment you were trying to edge in.
Yeah, like the young lady was saying, she supports the TTC because they want better pay and better wages. Everybody who takes the TTC, that causes TTC workers to get paid because it's the public. But they don't care about the public. They care about how much billions of dollars they make in profit every year. I watch the news. They make how much millions of dollars in profit. And at the end of the year, when I just started to take a TTC, the Metro Pass was like $37 in 1991.
Yeah.
And nobody says nothing. If they don't get funded by the government, they're not going to drive the bus. And yet they're showing on the budget how much they make in profit.
That's right. We're in a city where it's actually one of the least publicly funded, government-funded transportation systems in North America.
That's right, yes. So if they don't care about the public, we are the public, yet they say we are the government, we not. It's like Big Brother was saying, this is like just almost like a communist country. It's just that they take all our taxes, live big, live $4 billion, $40 million. We don't know where it goes. Nobody answers for it. Nobody know where it goes. It disappears under the carpet. In Ottawa, they pay for their assistants to go to school. Nobody says nothing. And yet we're working hard night and day. I'm at work right now. Nobody sees me when I'm working. Yet at the end of the year, they say, oh, in the government, that's the anthem. Oh, Canada. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And your points are, you're definitely all very well taken. And I think that even when we understand the history of communist countries, there's a huge distortion of what those actually were, even if they call themselves as such.
Even the recent
government in Libya called itself socialist, but it was far from being socialist.
That's right, as day from night.
But what you're trying to say is that what we have here is something like a dictatorship where the people really aren't listened to, and yet we're told to come and legitimize the system
with some votes. Can I ask you?
Sure.
Which ear that listens to us in the government, in the parliament?
Which ear listens to us? Who listens to us?
Yeah.
Well, this is actually, I think this touches on one of the other questions I wanted to ask Louise. You know, working class people are told that the NDP is our only option. You know, I mean, the Liberals and the Conservatives appeal to working people in different ways, often by appealing to our fears and our hatred that they instill amongst us with the media and so on and so forth. But, you know, the working class party, we're told, is the NDP. So let's actually look at the party that is, for the most part, almost always in the opposition, if not as a main official opposition, in a minor position, but is always in a position to be able to critique without having to govern. So let's actually look at where the NDP has actually governed. Louise, you recently wrote an article for Basics, which is on our website, basicsnews.ca, talking about this. What's the track record of the NDP?
Yes.
Well, the NDP has never been in power federally, but at a federal level, for the past four budgets, the NDP did support the Conservative budget. So by supporting it, they did say, you know, we're okay with this. And the NDP has been in power in Ontario and Saskatchewan, Manitoba, Nova Scotia.
BC, was
BC,
it?
Yeah. Of course. Yeah.
And that's where they rejected the HST?
When we look at their track record in these countries, they've cut taxes for corporations, they've imposed wage freezes for the workers. The largest paramilitary standoff was actually in BC under an NDP government.
That's right, Gustafson Lake, where they fired, I believe, thousands of rounds of ammunition at Native people who were occupying their own land.
It had never been ceded even in a treaty.
That's right, and that's the government. And that's who I am paying for. And every year, my taxes increase. I pay more. I was asking a parliamentary, knocking my door and saying, "Oh well, we're going to support." I say, for 8 years I've been with an insurance company. Every year my insurance goes up. Knock on wood. I don't have a speeding ticket. I don't have an accident. And every year it's going up and up. And then they say the government regulates it. Who is the government? The government owns the insurance company.
Yo, you want to hear something really funny, Derek? I got a speeding ticket in a speed trap a couple of weeks ago. I was down at the offices on Eglin today trying to pay that speeding ticket. And, you know, after paying the speeding ticket, I had a special surcharge for victims. So for my doing 60 and a 50, actually, my ticket was for doing 60 and a 50. I got a surcharge as well for the victims of you know, I guess of people who speed and other taxes. So anyways, yeah, your point is well taken, that the tax burden is shifting onto working class people.
Yes.
And indeed, you know, look at the left, the formal official left here in the city. That was Joe Pantalone's platform. Basically, the NDP, I think, very well knew that they were going to lose with a platform like that. And if they didn't, it just shows how disconnected they are with the people.
That's correct. Nobody listens like that. That's why I'm asking the young lady, who is listening? Who is listening to us when they get there? Who is listening? Tell me, who is listening?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the point is that student unions, nurses unions, we just don't have a spot on the table. They're, I mean, the government's having closed-door meetings with these big corporations, oil and mining corporations, but they're not going to listen to us because we don't have the money to back it up.
Now it's election and they're knocking at your door, aren't they?
Derek, stay on the line with us. We got another caller. Let's bring them in.
Sure. Okay, no problem.
Caller, you're on the line with us. You got a comment?
Yeah, hi, Steve. It's Gladys again.
Yes, Gladys. Back on the line.
Your guest to break it down for us, the difference between a people power type of government versus what we have now. So to sort of break it down for us, you know, the differences, the distinct differences between these different types of political systems of governing.
Uh-huh. So basically the difference between people power and more or less what we've been kind of, you know, dancing around, but in essence is a dictatorship of banks and big capital. So what really is the difference, guys? You know, we're at 9 o'clock now. We got to close up the show. And again, I just want to thank Gladys and Derek for their comments. But what really is the difference between those types of systems, and how, you know, what is people power actually look like? What happens after this boycott campaign? We have better organizations, stronger ones. What comes next?
Well, first of all, I would hope that there would be better organizations and stronger ones after this campaign, which has only been, you know, not even a month. But, you know, that'd be amazing. But in terms of, like, looking at, like, what people's power, or, like, you know, a real thriving democracy that talks about supporting human life looks like, as opposed to what we have now, what opposes democracy. And again, we don't have much time left, but I do want to talk about it as being something that gets over the schism between, like, political democracy and economic democracy. I mean, right now we just vote for parties, and everything that happens economically, like whether or not we're evicted, what wages we make, the fact that I have to pay my landlord, the fact that the landlord has the power over me, and all these kinds of things, the way that ownership functions, private property, all these things are decided ahead of time, and we have no power over them, right? That's the one that happens already by consent.
Sorry, but you don't even hear about these things. All you do is, after the law is passed, like I was saying, when I go in the ministry to renew my sticker, my plate, that's when I knew the fee went up by $60. I never heard about it before. I never saw it nowhere in the news.
Yeah, so Derek, what you're saying is that people don't really, many of the important issues that are affecting us aren't being debated by the politicians.
No, that's right. You don't hear about it. You don't. All you know is it comes into law.
Yeah, and you're saying that we can't even hold the politicians accountable. So even though
Rumsford said he would get rid of this fee,
he obviously did. What can you do about it? In this democracy, we can't trap the politicians. We just have to put up with them, and that's on.
No, we don't have to put up. We want to, because it's democracy. Everybody should be done in front of City Hall, wherever it is, in front of Ottawa Gates, and saying we are not accepting it.
I'm curious, Derek, you know, you've been a very spirited caller. I'm glad you came on the line with us tonight. So, in your view, what is to be done?
All the politicians that sit there when they're having meetings, you see, like how when you're having a public meeting, when they're going out campaigning, and they want your vote, the same thing should be happening. That's democracy. When they're passing the laws, have a big meeting and see who is in favor of passing this bill or passing the bill that you're not supposed to kill a raccoon because they're going to send you to jail, and if it's the same way they have in the campaigns when they want to be elected, have the campaigns when the bills need to be passed so the public could be aware of it.
Okay, so this is actually precisely part of the problem, Derek, because the issues that matter to people are not being brought to our attention, you know, the biggest...
Until the bill is passed.
Exactly. So you have the bombing of Libya was supported by all the parties. You had big banking bailouts in Canada that most Canadians have no clue even
happened. Yes, what went on, that's right.
Yeah, so basically the important issues are not being debated, but this is precisely the nature of the democracy that we live in, where the most important issues to working class people are not actually being debated. So the question then becomes, what do we need to do? What do people need to do to actually claim a power for themselves that can lead to people power?
Like I said to you, it's because Canadians are so naive. You see everywhere you pass is neighborhood watch.
Yeah.
Neighborhood only pass, so if you walk in the street and because your color is different, they would call the cops. And when you're going down the street, you see the lights flash behind you on what you're doing in this neighborhood.
Yeah.
You know, that's not democracy.
No, it's not.
And that is what they're talking about. And yet, when you say you have rights, rights is when you do something that you do it freely without fear, without looking over your shoulder. And everyone, like this little group, should be coming together, lining up their vehicles all down the streets, like how the TTC does it, the same way, because we are the people. We are not taking the TTC, because when they're ready to strike, we strike it. So we are not buying gas. We're going to walk to work. We're going to buy bicycles. And we're going to buy little scooters.
All right, man. That's some serious direct action you're talking about. Derek, I'm going to have to leave you there because we got to wrap our show.
Brother.
Thank you
so much, brother,
for being on the line with us tonight. So really, the question that looms large then is what is to be done, not just now, but after the elections and as a whole, so that, you know, we can actually develop a system where the representatives that we have are completely controlled by the people. What comes next, really?
I think what we need to start thinking about is what we actually want. Mm-hmm. So it's not about, you know, looking at what we don't want or, you know, choosing the least worst option. It's what do we want? How are we going to get there? How can we have communal control over our resources?
Mm-hmm.
And we can only come to those answers, I think, if people start to come out to community organizations and start talking about this.
All right. Josh, final comments?
I think too, this is like just, you know, obviously a step that I'm glad about all these questions about, like, what would people's power look like down the line. I think there's a lot of organizations. I mean, we're just talking about boycott in a way to talk about people to organize. But I think there's a lot of other organizations in the city that are doing good work.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, the organization that puts on this show, for example. And
Basics.
And I think that's like, I think the momentum that we're trying to build too, it can feed into that and lead to like kind of these coalition things and kind of like talk about people and all these different issues that really get them on being politicized. And maybe down the line it can lead to a movement like we've had in the past that now don't seem to exist outside of the system, at least here in Canada.
They were demobilized, they're gone,
yeah.
And we were told that the NDP did it all and it was concessions from Liberals and Conservatives.
And they're shattered. There's a lot of good news that they're shattered.
So finally, where can people find out more information about the boycott campaign?
It's boycott2011.ca.
All right. And you can also check out Louise Jones's article on basicsnews.ca, as well as all of some very important local reporting we've done in the last couple weeks on Rob Ford's City Hall and their plan to privatize community housing in Toronto. Radio Basics, we're signing off for this week. Thank you so much for listening in, and be sure to check us out, and thank you to our guest tonight.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
Thanks.
I came to bring the truth, raw flows from the booth. There's a mic named Machete in my soldier boots. Strapped and ready, trapped in my medley. Throw your hands up and wave them like this. Say power to the people and clench your fist. Now raise your middle finger up and say fuck the bitch. Make an L with your hand and keep it up in the sky. Spread love from your hearts through the earth you beside. Now everybody in the place to be. Raise both your fists up and scream, let's get free. Put your ones up, come on, let me see them. One people, one cause, man, let me feel it. Pump up your fists in the sky like this. Point at the satellite, tell them to suck this hit. We gon' kill them with the sound and get wild in the crowd. Now stop.
Go.
Get buck, let your adrenaline rush. Get buck, let your adrenaline rush. Get buck, let your adrenaline rush. Get buck, let your adrenaline rush.
I got the Calcutta bounce and that Bengali swagger. What a chicken flow, these other gimmicks don't match up. If you need that real hip-hop, say hell yeah. If you know hip-hop ain't dead, say hell no like that. And like this enough, real MCs take the mic back, listen up, energy shines, I don't need to glisten up, keep your chains, your rims, and your stolen styles, you sound like your favorite rapper, so you famous now, riding in your Beamer, whining like a diva, I'ma be puffin' reaper, bumping this through my speaker, I rebel till I die, I don't follow leaders. Pump your fists in the sky like this. Point at the satellite, tell them to suck this hit. We gon' kill them with the sound, get wild in the crowd, now stop.
Get fucked like your adrenaline rush. Get fucked like your adrenaline rush. Get fucked like your adrenaline rush. Get fucked like your adrenaline rush.
Cameras watching like God over coffins. Big brother nosy, privacy under caution. Terrorizing beats, spitting heat till you fly.
dry spit. Pump your fists like this up in the mosh pit. Wild out like you lost it. Pour out a little liquor if you really got it. Roll the